Axis Mundi.
Welcome to One Nation Indivisible. I'm Andrew L. Seidel, a constitutional attorney and the author of The Founding Myth and American Crusade. This is a podcast about religion, the law, and the battle for America's soul. We'll be separating church and state, defending freedom and equality, and fighting Christian nationalism. If you haven't already, sign up for our weekly bonus content and ad-free listening at accessmundi.us. LFG, folks.
Folks, I wanted to provide you a quick little update because I recorded this episode on Friday late afternoon after work ended, and kind of a lot has changed since then, both in Minneapolis and with what we were talking about in this episode, which was the FACE Act prosecutions for the people who entered the church, the ICE church, to protest. Obviously, there was the murder of Alex Preddy by ICE agents in Minneapolis on Saturday. And we did not cover that in this episode. And we are living in just horrific times. I was making lunch for five kids and just put a pizza in the oven, was cutting up vegetables, and had one of those kind of 2-minute breaks, a lull. Stupidly logged on to social media to just see what was happening in the world and watched our government murder a citizen, disarm him, and shoot him as he was lying on the ground prone. Several agents, looks like 10 shots. Murder. It was not an execution because this was straight up murder. And we're seeing the administration, the regime, do the thing that it does. These murderers cheered as they walked away. They fist pumped and clapped. They acted like the bullies they are, believing that they're not going to face any kind of accountability or consequences for their actions. And that is something that we cannot allow to stand. And that I want every candidate running for office in the future to make a central part of their pillar. A central pillar of their platform, excuse me. So we're not going to cover that murder fully in this episode. And I also want to add on a little bit about the FACE Act prosecutions that has come to light over the weekend, which I did not cover in this episode, so we'll tag that on at the end. Folks, we're going back to Minnesota today to cover a couple of developments out of there that I have not seen covered enough. I want to talk about the altered photo that the White House posted and why and what that really reveals again about this MAGA white Christian nationalist movement that we are facing. And I also want to talk about the FACE Act, F-A-C-E, FACE Act prosecutions that have been promised and the arrests that were made in service of that. Because I don't think people realize how dangerous that is, and that it is, in all probability, going to be successful. But let's start with the White House posting an altered photo of Nakima Levy Armstrong as she was arrested for allegedly protesting this church service, which again, we're going to get to that more in the next block. The White House posted an altered image of her arrest, and it's photoshopped, or more likely, given the timeline, an AI faked image of the arrest. And most major media outlets have analyzed and concluded that the image the White House posted is fake, and there's good evidence. And I'm going to link to the Guardian story about this in the show notes, and I recommend that you check it out. The Guardian also has this cool tool in their article that lets you, it's got the photos superimposed over each other and lets you slide between the real and fake image to see that it was very clearly deliberately altered. And so here's what the Guardian says. Quote, "The Guardian overlaid the White House photo with the Nome photo," and that's the photo that Kristi Noem originally published, that shows what actually happened, the unaltered photo. "The Guardian overlaid the White House photo with the Nome photo and found that the law enforcement agents in both pictures line up exactly, confirming they are the same image. There are other similarities between the photos. An unidentified person can be seen in the same place behind the arresting agent, and the arresting agent's arm appears to be behind Armstrong's back in exactly the same position." So the photos are the same, so we know it was altered. It's very clearly altered, and the Guardian's cool tool on their article will help you understand that. How was it altered is truly, truly shocking and depressing and depraved. And there are a few things worth mentioning, I think. That first is the agent who was arresting Armstrong has their face blurred out in both photos because they are utter cowards. The second, and this is the obvious change, the Trump White House's fake image depicts Armstrong crying. Tears are streaming down her face. Her mouth is held agape, open, kind of this stunned, tearful, pitiful look that they have given her that she does not have in the original image, which shows a calm defiance. Armstrong is a black woman. And the Trump White House's fake image depicts her with darker skin than she has. So this is a black woman being marched out by authorities who are effectively masked, right, given the pixelation. This is not a good look. In fact, the masking of agents echoes some pretty horrific moments in American history. We'll get to those in a moment. But worse, Trump's White House wasn't content with this showy arrest. They needed embarrassment and pain and misery. Pain and misery inflicted upon a black woman and reflected back to their MAGA base. They needed a picture that showed the cruelty that they value so much was working, was in force. And Armstrong didn't give them that. She gave them that calm defiance in the original photo. So Photoshop or AI did. And this really goes back to Adam Serwer's article and just which cut through so much of what we are seeing, that the cruelty is the point. The cruelty is the point. I mean, the cruelty is the point behind altering this image. Trump's White House was repeatedly asked about altering the image, and a deputy dipshit press secretary responded, quote, "The memes will continue." It has that flavor of the beatings will continue until morale improves. And I think that is what it was meant to evoke, which again is in keeping with the cruelty is the point. But I mean, this is not a meme. This is propaganda. This is not a meme. This is a lie. They want their white Christian base to know that they are punishing black and brown America for existing, cruelly punishing them, cruelly and publicly punishing them. And as I was looking at this photo, and in particular the slider of the two photos on the Guardian website, an image popped into my head of New York City, black and white image, elevated from, a higher story, shooting down one of the streets with a flag flying outside a building and the crowd below, in fuzzy out of the depth of focus. And it's a picture of the NAACP headquarters and the flag that they used to fly outside of their New York City office in the 1920s and 30s that read, and you can see this clearly in the photo, "A man was lynched yesterday." And if you've ever read accounts of those lynchings, the lynchings that took place across this country and mostly across the American South. And the NAACP says that from 1882 to 1968, there were 4,743 lynchings that occurred in the U.S. 4,743 lynchings. If you've ever read any of those accounts, the stories are horrific. I mean, chilling does not even begin to cover it. They are truly barbaric and inhumane, collective and public violence that showed the worst angels of our nature. What Isabel Wilkerson calls a culture of cruelty and the euphoria of hate. And Wilkerson's book, Caste, is one of those books that really changes how you see the world. And I'm going to link to it in the show notes. I'll link to the NAACP history and everything I'm talking about. There's going to be a lot of links in the show notes today that you should check out. It's one of those books that changes how you see the world. And I have it actually in my list of books that'll change the way you think on bookshop.org. And Wilkerson recounts several stories, detailed stories of the lynching and the lynchings. And I was reminded of the book when I was researching this episode and the faked photo, because there was some stuff, horrific stuff in Wilkerson's book that I did not know about. You know, most people know that lynchings happened, but they don't understand how horrific they truly were. And I don't think I understand the full extent now, but I certainly didn't understand much until I read Wilkerson's book. I didn't realize how proud everybody was to be a part of it. Children were let out of school, families attended, crowds sometimes numbered in the tens of thousands. And this is the detail that stuck with me. Souvenirs were popular. Souvenirs like severed ears and fingers. And for those not lucky enough or authoritative or close enough to get a body part, photographers would set up shop at the site of the brutal murder, and they would produce postcards that people could buy and send to their family in the mail, writing jokes about this wantonly cruel murder on the back of the postcard for everybody to read. These were photos of murder, of brutal murder, openly confessing to it. Not just confessing to it, celebrating it, because it showcased that culture of cruelty. And the difference here strikes me, the difference between the photo, the White House's altered photo of Armstrong, the photo that they changed to make it more cruel and to revel in the cruelty of what they are doing, and what I learned about the lynchings in Wilkerson's book, Caste, strikes me as a difference of degree, not of kind. So let's take a quick break and then we'll get into why the Trump regime set its sights on Armstrong in the first place. So I'm going to start as, if you're not reading Hemant Mehta's Friendly Atheist news, it's on Substack now, you're missing out. And I'm going to start by quoting Hemant and some of what he found about the facts of this case. The article is entitled, "The Anti-ICE Protest at a Minnesota Church Was a Justified Rebuke of the Pastor's Cruelty." Again, cruelty is the point. And of course, I will link this in the show notes. And but listen, again, if you're not reading Hemant you should be subscribing, you should be supporting his work. He is awesome, he is prolific, he has been doing this for probably 20 years. He sold his soul on eBay in one of the truly iconic moves of all time. eBay changed its rules to prevent that after him. He wrote a book about it. Love Hemant, and I trust his reporting. I know that when it comes to getting the facts right, he goes the extra mile, and he's always willing to correct himself when he doesn't. Hemant explains what happened at this protest, and some of you have probably seen the video by now. You know, Don Lemon got involved, and to some degree, and that there was a huge backlash. Here's how Hemant describes it. Quote, "A group of about three dozen activists in Minneapolis, where an ICE agent murdered an innocent woman, Renee Good, earlier this month, interrupted services at a Southern Baptist-affiliated city's church in St. Paul on Sunday morning. They stepped into the building to yell, 'ICE out and justice for Renee Good.'" Again, I'm sure some of you have seen the videos by now. Hemant continues, "That's not just a random church. That would have been pointless. This was a church that employs David Easterwood, the acting director of a local ICE field office, as a pastor. The Christians in that church dealt with a minor inconvenience. It's nothing compared to the horror that's been inflicted on the entire lives of people in that community, in part because a pastor at the church is personally leading a group of law-breaking, armed, government-backed mercenaries." End of Hemant's quote. And I'm just going to pause there because that last part is important. ICE is wantonly trampling the law. I mean, we've just seen that they are claiming on their own authority that they don't need warrants, even though the Constitution says, yeah, you fucking do. ICE is a lawless entity. Hemant continues, Easterwood, the ICE pastor. "Easterwood, by all accounts, wasn't even at church Sunday morning, but he doesn't deserve a moment of calm anywhere he goes for the rest of his life. And the people in that congregation should be ashamed of their own complicity in ICE's campaign of terror by continuing to attend that church." That's essentially what one protest organizer said.
This episode is brought to you by Glorify, the number one Christian daily devotional app. Everything around us changes. God doesn't. That's why I love Glorify's 21-day challenge. It helps me build a simple habit of meeting with God every day. No pressure, just consistency. With Glorify, you can start your morning by reading the Bible passage of the day, diving into Glorify's daily devotional, and wrapping up with an immersive experience called Daily Walk with God. And if you need to take a few minutes to yourself in the middle of a busy day, try one of Glorify's guided meditations or listen to their curated worship playlists for some quiet reflection. To end the day, enjoy Glorify's sleep meditations to help you wind down and put your mind and heart at ease. Whether you're a committed Christian or simply curious about faith, Glorify has something for you. Join over 20 million people who have downloaded the Glorify app and deepened their relationship with God. Listeners to the show can get full access to Glorify for just $29.99 for the entire year. That's Glorify's lowest price ever when you download the Glorify app now at glorify-app.com/redcircle. Feel closer to God this year with Glorify. Get full access all year for just $29.99 at glorify-app.com/redcircle. That's glorify-app.com/redcircle.
Okay, again, go read Hemant as always. And, you know, I agree. The ICE pastor deserves no peace, not a moment of peace or calm or rest. And this is kind of one of those, you know, rare instances where I agree with Jesus. Y'all remember the story of him flipping tables because the money changers were set up in the temple. You know, there are times where I really like the biblical Jesus, the character, and this is kind of one of them, right? But it's also, you know, there's also some like, you know, I don't know, it's kind of got some big zealot vibes too, right? They're dirtying my holy place. That's a sentiment that can get out of hand quickly and can lead to abuse, right? If you're doing it for the purity of your sanctuary, you know, that can cut a couple different ways. But other times you've heard me talk about the story of the woman taken in adultery. I fucking love that story. Really, really fascinating and interesting. And not originally part of the Bible. That was an addition. It was a cool story that some scribe added later on and was like, that sounds like Jesus. Sounds like JC. Let's give him the credit. But Jesus was like also, he was kind of a dick sometimes too, if we're being honest. Right? Like there's the time where Jesus sends his apostles out with certain instructions in Matthew 10. Don't imagine that I came to bring peace to the earth. I came not to bring peace, but a sword. I've come to set a man against his father, a daughter against his mother, and a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. Your enemies will be right in your own household. Earlier in Matthew 10, Jesus tells them not to preach outside of their co-religionists in verses 5 and 6. Shortly after, I mean, he's got this seemingly wise statement and, kind of lifted. It sounds great about not judging others lest we be judged. But Jesus also, right after that, likens people who don't follow him to dogs and pigs, unholy and unworthy. Quote, do not give what is holy to dogs and do not throw your pearls before swine. And then there's that story when Jesus sends his 12 apostles out to convince people that he was God. He didn't send them out to everybody, right? He says, don't go to the Gentiles or the Samaritans. Go to the lost sheep of Israel, right? He's not really an equal opportunity preacher. And there's one story both Matthew and Mark tell of a woman who was not an Israelite who has a sick daughter. And she asks Jesus, hey, can you cure my kid? I've got a sick child. Cure them. And Jesus ignores the woman. His disciples urge Jesus to send the woman away, but she persists. And finally, Jesus chides the woman again and says, it's not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs. In other words, the miracles, those are for my people. Those are for my followers, not for dogs who worship other gods. It's not until the woman professes her faith in Jesus, until she calls Jesus master and Lord for the third time, that he relents and says, woman, great is your faith. And then he deigns to save that innocent sick child because the mother converts and declares her obedience to and belief in him. So, I don't know. Not always the picture of the moral leader and teacher. Like, if I could heal a sick kid, I would just do it. The point is, I've strayed, but the point is that Jesus is a moral teacher, but he clearly doesn't get it right all the time, right? And I actually think that makes him a more interesting literary character, and also less likely to be a divine being, right? He gets some things right, he gets some things wrong. He's kind of good, he's kind of not good. He kind of blows it on some easy moral questions. But in this case, like, would JC be protesting the church at which the preacher was aligned with the state paramilitary force that's oppressing the community? I kind of think he would be protesting. I don't think he would be aligned with that church that was aligning itself with the state paramilitary force. Which brings us to the brouhaha afterwards, which again, Hemant details. I'm going to cut to the chase. Basically, the Department of Justice is going after these protesters for violating the FACE Act. The FACE, FACE, FACE Act, which stands for Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances. FACE, Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances Act. It was passed in 1994. And this was proposed and debated and amended around the time that the Religious Freedom Restoration Act was being debated. So check out American Crusade for more on that monstrosity. But this was a time when abortion clinics were being vandalized and mobbed and attacked and firebombed. Hundreds of thousands of anti-abortionists were sometimes outside. Doctors were targeted. They were murdered in August of 1993, right as this was all happening. Dr. George Tiller, who provided abortions, was shot outside of his clinic 5 times. He survived, only to be murdered later. I mean, so abortion clinics were under assault, and that was part of what's happening and why this act came into being. In fact, there's a Senate report on it, which notes that from 1977 through 1993, there had been, quote, 36 bombings, 81 arsons, 131 death threats, 84 assaults, 2 kidnappings, 327 clinic invasions, and 1 murder at clinics that provided reproductive care, abortion clinics, Planned Parenthood clinics, right? So there was an organized assault on these clinics. The Army of God was one of the groups that was behind this. And Congress wanted to step in and do something to protect people's right to access that kind of care. So they passed this law, and the operative text for us is an addition. Okay, and I'm going to read it. I'm going to ignore the clinic language for now, and I'll explain why this reads the way it does in a second. But Section A2 of the FACE Act says, whoever, quote, by force or threat of force or by physical obstruction, okay, so that's one element, force, threat of force, or physical obstruction, intentionally injures, intimidates, or interferes with, or attempts to injure, intimidate, or interfere with, okay? So interfere with any person lawfully seeking, oh, excuse me, with any person lawfully exercising or seeking to exercise the First Amendment right of religious freedom at a place of worship. Okay, so there's a couple elements there. You have to have the force, threat of force, or physical obstruction. They have to injure, intimidate, or interfere with, that's the second element. The third is someone who is seeking to worship. And then fourth, at a place of religious worship. Okay. And it also allows for a civil action to be brought against anybody who does that. And so this begins as a simple idea, and the same language is mirrored for clinics. Christian extremists would form mobs outside of these health clinics. The mobs were actively preventing people from exercising their own rights. And as I wrote a whole book about called American Crusade, and as we've talked about on this podcast all the time, we all have limits on our rights. And our rights are limited by the rights of other people. That's part of equality. You can't have equality if your rights trump my rights. We have limits on speech and on religion and all of our rights. Somebody's religious freedom is not an excuse to violate my right of personal property, for instance, or of bodily autonomy, for instance. So this was a bill that was simply trying to, and perhaps in a convoluted way, kind of explain those lines, if we're being charitable. Your religion, your right to assemble and to protest does not include the right to violate the rights of others or to prevent them from exercising their rights. To do so would make you superior in the eyes of the law. We're talking Christian supremacy here. This is what we mean when I constantly am talking about weaponizing religious freedom. And the intent was not to protect houses of worship and those exercising their religious freedom in houses of worship. The whole point of this bill, the whole point of this law, was to protect clinics, which were under assault. Religious freedom was smuggled in by an amendment that was proposed by Orrin Hatch, Senator Orrin Hatch of Utah, who is a villain in so many stories. And it was actually pretty late in the process. It wasn't until the third reading of or the third version of the Senate bill, after Hatch had actually voted against the bill in committee. So it was pretty late in the process when this was added on. And Ed Whalen, who is loud, obnoxious Christian nationalist at the National Review Online, NRO, and who was a Hatch staffer at the time, claimed credit for the amendment to the FACE Act. He claimed credit in 2023 because Hatch proposes this amendment to include houses of worship, mirror that language. It gets a voice vote and passes. There's no real debate, though apparently the Catholic Church was excited, and you can imagine why. But it's never really been used to protect the A2. A1 is the clinic language. A2 is the language that mirrors that, but is about houses of worship. It's never really been used for that. It's because houses of worship and Christians are not under assault in this country. They're not. There's no threat of them being persecuted, or they are the fucking majority still. It's not. This is rare what happened in Minnesota, extraordinary circumstances. So it's never really been used to do anything other than protect clinics. And in fact, Senators Cruz, Ted Cruz, and Mike Lee, two just terrible people that would be great if they went away. And it's cold in Texas as I'm recording this, so maybe Ted Cruz is actually, somewhere in Mexico. The senator from Cancun, as Melissa Murray coined on the Strict Scrutiny podcast one time, and I remember doing a spit take when she said that. I spit coffee all over my computer monitor. Anyway, I've lost my train of thought. Oh, senator from Cancun and the senator from Utah in 2016, they complained to the DOJ, to Loretta Lynch. They wrote her this letter basically saying, "You never use the FACE Act to protect houses of worship." And they don't say what it is being protected from in the letter, which is relevant because there is no threat to it. And listen, the FACE Act has been in the sights of the Christian nationalist legal movement for a while. And in fact, one of the things that Donald Trump did back at the beginning of Trump 2.0 was to pardon a bunch of the people who had invaded clinics and had been prosecuted successfully under the FACE Act. He gave them pardons, even though they had. And in fact, I wrote about this for Americans United, and I'll include that a link to that article in the show notes as well. But Trump pardoned them and then announced these pardons at the prayer breakfast last year. And by the way, the prayer breakfast is right around the corner. I believe it's February 6th. And he talks about the reason that he, pardoned Paula Paulette Harlow was because of this anti-Christian bias that exists in our legal system, which is just not the case. Trump says she was sentenced to 2 years in prison for peacefully praying outside of a clinic, which is totally not true. Her actions were not peaceful, and they were not outside of a clinic. She helped plan and execute a forceful blockade of a reproductive health clinic in D.C. in October 20. Excuse me, in October 2020, during not only the run-up to a presidential election, but when COVID cases had topped 9 million nationally. I mean, in the middle of a pandemic, they are invading a health clinic. One of her co-conspirators booked a sham appointment, and then when they were given access, the co-conspirator was given access to the clinic. Harlow and the others forced their way in, and what was described as a, quote, melee ensued. Harlow fell on the clinic manager, shoved an employee into a waiting room chair. She and nine others blockaded the clinic doors using their bodies, furniture, ropes, locks, and chains, which we have some records of the meetings, which Harlow had advocated for doing just that. They actually live streamed this assault on the healthcare and on the patients who were exercising their most basic rights. They shut the clinic down for 2.5 hours. And of the prosecution, Harlow, she's paraded around on Fox News talking about it's an incredible honor. And so she was sentenced to 24 months for this high honor. And there's also a bit about the Trump lying about the judge mocking Harlow's Christian faith, which is just not true. Again, go read the article. But the point is that, look, these protesters are in a bind. MAGA and Christian nationalists, they have hated the FACE Act for a long time. And not least because it's never been really used to protect churches, because that's never really a thing or a need that exists. But what is going to. I believe that the legal movement on that side now sees this as a chance to reshape and rewrite the FACE Act to center their churches, to protect the Catholic Church from protests by survivors, to protect ICE churches from anti-ICE protesters, to protect Christian nationalist churches like Greg Locke's and like those crazy patriot churches that you see in Tennessee and mega churches that are run by Paula White and Joel Osteen from any kind of protest or dissenters. This is going to be another attempt by them to weaponize religious freedom, to elevate the right kind of Christian for special protection. All while other cases are making their way through the courts to undermine the original intent of the FACE Act. Right? Original intent, which is something that Christian nationalist lawyers are normally so horny for, they're going to morph the FACE Act into something else entirely. I hope these protesters have great lawyers, y'all. I am not optimistic about this. In this climate, with these judges and this DOJ, I am nervous for them. Especially as the case works its way higher and higher through the courts. Less worried about it at the district court level, but I am worried about this, y'all, seriously. Again, this is another chance for the Christian nationalist lawyers in the captured court to reach that end goal of white Christian nationalism. Hopefully you know by now what I'm talking about, but Christian nationalism is a threat to every single person who is not the quote right kind of Christian, a conservative, white, heteronormative Christian man. Christian nationalism is bent on inequality, favoritism, or, that word that I know some people in this movement don't like, but privilege. Christian nationalism seeks privilege in the true sense of that word. I've often written about how it's Christian nationalism is a permission structure for evil, for Christian supremacy, for white supremacy, for Republican policies that hurt people. It's a license to harm because it's a license to assume that superior role, that place above the law. And the end goal, in the end, they want a society that says that conservative, white, heteronormative Christian men are the in-group, that the law protects but does not bind. Everybody else, probably everybody listening to this podcast, all of us will be the out-group, the others, which the law binds but does not protect. And look, I mean, this is, folks, that is the theme of every dystopian novel or authoritarian regime. If you boil it down, that is their end goal. The chosen few are protected by the law but not bound. All others are bound but not protected. That's where we're headed, and I think what happened at this church, while I absolutely support the goals and ends, is going to be turned against our legal movement and weaponized. And I am very worried. We'll be keeping an eye on it. We'll be keeping tabs. We'll keep you in the loop as the case moves forward. Hopefully it gets dismissed. Hopefully we can, or hopefully it continues on until we have a new administration in place, especially at DOJ, that has some semblance of nonpartisanship. But I'm worried, y'all. So a little more about the FACE Act prosecutions from the update, Andrew, which is me. The administration was seeking several indictments under the FACE Act, eight specifically. Three of those went forward, and that included the arrest that we just covered in this episode. But five of them did not go forward, and included in those was the indictment of Don Lemon, or excuse me, the arrest warrant for Don Lemon. The arrest warrants, not indictments, arrest warrants, for Don Lemon and for his producer. And we learned over the weekend that some crazy stuff was happening, because when the magistrate judge, so magistrate judge is sort of like the lowest level judge in a federal court. They're below the district court judge. They're a district court judge, but they kind of handle like the day-to-day basic stuff, like arrest warrants. And the magistrate judge refused to sign off on the arrest warrant for five of the people involved in that church protest. The administration was pissed off about that and took it to the chief judge at the district level. And the chief judge is like, you can't really appeal this kind of thing. Let me just take a look. And he asks around, and we know this because he's got several letters that he's put together. And he says, yeah, this is not typical. I haven't heard of this happening, this kind of appeal that you're trying to do right now. I will look at this more closely, and I will rule on it on Tuesday, the day that this episode is dropping, January 27th. And that is not good enough for the administration. So they file an appeal up to the Eighth Circuit, the circuit court, under seal. And so the chief judge gets this letter from the clerk at the Eighth Circuit and says, hey, you've got to respond to this thing in 2 hours. He can't even see the documents that the administration has filed. It is crazy. And Stephen Vladeck over at One First Street has covered this well and has copies of the two letters on his Substack. You can go look. And the judge is, being forced to respond to this stuff in an hour or 2 hours, and doing so blind. And as Vladeck points out, the Eighth Circuit did the right thing and agreed with him, except for one judge, a Trump appointee named Gross, who was a nightmare. But they should have slapped the administration around over this, and they didn't, which is troubling. And the administration was arguing that if the courts did not provide an arrest warrant for these folks immediately, that it constituted a national emergency because it was going to lead to all kinds of protests and violations at churches over the weekend, which, as we know, didn't really happen. Churches and synagogues, they were sure to include, which again didn't really happen. So They are pushing hard on this, on these FACE Act prosecutions. We'll see where they end, but and I will do a better job of covering the ins and outs of the procedure in future episodes, because again, I mean, as we just learned, things are happening so fast here, and there's been no real briefing on the substance of the law. Although all we know is this is kind of unprecedented right now. These sort of FACE Act prosecutions that we're seeing are unprecedented, and that was the main thing that I wanted to cover in this episode. So we will cover the details of the rest of that in future episodes, and the Preti murder, and no, I've not forgotten about the Ten Commandments hearing. All that we will cover again in future episodes. Thanks, y'all.
This has been One Nation Indivisible. I'm Andrew Seidel. Until next time.